the last Sunday in January, the last Sunday in January. In former years, many years ago, this was a time of panic for me and maybe for you, because January is the month where, after you've selected the right calendar or whatever book you use to record events, you probably got it before January, and you said, in January, I'll transfer all the information from last year's calendar to this year's calendar by pencil. Some of you remember doing that, right? And January would be the month when you would transfer that and all those addresses and telephone numbers, right? That was the pre-digital world. Of course, it's all done for us now. We don't even have to think about it, but January still holds something about calendars and beginnings. And I'm admittedly a bit of a geek about the liturgical calendar, so I want to say something about where we are in January, not just at the end of the month, but where we are in the liturgical year. This is the third Sunday of Ordinary Time. Ordinary Time is that time between the big seasons of the liturgical year, between Easter and Christmas, and is ordinary because the Sundays are placed in order. They are given numbers. The third Sunday in Ordinary Time. Do you remember last Sunday is the second Sunday in Ordinary Time, and it was the marriage feast of Cana. You might wonder, whatever happened to the first Sunday in Ordinary Time? I'll let you in on a liturgical calendar secret. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist because that first week of Ordinary Time, the weekdays there, are the first week in Ordinary Time. The Sunday before it is usually the baptism of the Lord. There is no first Sunday in Ordinary Time. So have that ready if you ever go to a liturgical calendar quiz, all right? But there's something strange that's happening, isn't there? What came before the baptism of the Lord? It was Epiphany. So the Christmas season has Epiphany and it ends with the baptism of the Lord. And then Ordinary Time begins with the wedding feast of Cana. In some Protestant denominations, the calendar looks a little different. Epiphany starts a season called the Epiphany season or Epiphanytide that in the Anglican Church goes all the way to the Feast of the Presentation on February 2nd. And in other denominations, Epiphanytide goes all the way till the Sunday before Ash Wednesday. Epiphany. What does Epiphany mean? Epiphany means to show forth, to reveal. And if you dig down in the Greek meaning of the word, it actually means like to shine forth in a way that is surprising. Epiphany time, Epiphany tide is the time when Jesus begins to shine forth. We've heard how he came among us, and then during this season of Epiphanies, we hear about how he is shown to the world. On Epiphany to the Magi, the baptism, we hear about the Lord expresses his pleasure with his son. And last week at the wedding feast of Cana, it's the first of the great signs in John's gospel. So we are in the season in which Jesus is revealed. Enough calendar geekiness. What about the readings? What do they have to say about this? It's very interesting because the second half of the reading today, of the gospel reading today, is about Jesus going to his home synagogue and preaching, reading and preaching. One of the ways that God is revealed to us is through the word and through the interpretation of that word. So in a sense, this is yet another Epiphany Sunday, because Jesus is revealing God through the word as he reveals God through his very self. And that's where the first reading ties into it. Now, everybody in Washington, their ears perk up when they hear that this happens near the Watergate. It's not the Watergate that you're thinking of. Watergate here is two words, not one word. And actually, it's kind of interesting of why this scene is set by the Watergate. The Jewish people have returned from exile in Babylon. They are rebuilding the city of Jerusalem. And the two main characters of this book of the Old Testament are Nehemiah and Ezra. Nehemiah is, in fact, the contractor who is built, the general contractor who's building the walls, rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. And Isaiah is the priest who is rebuilding the spiritual life through the rediscovery of the scriptures of the law. They work hand in hand, rebuilding the physical reality, rebuilding the spiritual reality. And today we get that snapshot set by, if you can imagine, maybe a recently finished part of the wall near the water gate, which is, scholars aren't clear whether it's water that went up to the temple, came down to the temple, or a place where water was distributed. But there's flowing water there, and the word is being read to people after they have not heard it for a long time. God is being revealed. And did you catch the various pieces of how Ezra goes about doing it? He takes up the scroll, shows it to the people, goes to a high place, reads the scroll, and then interprets it. It's what we just did. It's the liturgy of the word. So that is a way in which God is revealed to his people, through the word, very fitting for Epiphany tide. But what I want to really focus on is the beginning of the gospel reading. The first part is separated from the second part. The second part happens a good four chapters after the first part, after the infancy narratives and John the Baptist and all the rest. It's kind of unique in the Gospels because it's the author talking about why he's doing the gospel. Listen to it one more time. Since many have undertaken to compile a narrative of the events that have been fulfilled among us, just as those who were eyewitnesses from the beginning and ministers of the word have handed them down to us, I too have decided, after investigating everything accurately anew, to write it down in an orderly sequence for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may realize the certainty of the teachings you have received. One could spend a long time just unpacking what's going on there. A few things to note. Theophilus literally means a lover of God. Is that a person's name, or is that kind of a generic name for anybody interested in the story of Jesus? Nobody's really clear on that. And it's interesting that Luke says he's writing it for Theophilus, who's already heard about Jesus, but he's doing this to strengthen his faith, to make sure that he doesn't stumble. So it's written to all of us. It's not for people who haven't heard about Jesus at all. It's for people who have heard and need to hear about it anew. And Luke is very clear. There are other people that have told the story. Sounds like he thinks that some are good and some are bad because he's done a thorough investigation. And now he's going to put everything in an orderly manner so Theophilus, you can understand what that faith is that's been handed on to you. That was Luke's intent. Flip to the second reading for a second. What we heard of the second reading is a much shorter version of a longer version we could have heard, the extended metaphor, simile of the body of the church. Fundamentally, what that reading is about is diversity and unity, or as Pope Francis likes to talk about it, reconciled diversity. So, you know, Luke was somebody who had a skill at writing and probably at investigating, and so he was going to write something anew because that was the gift that he was given. And, you know, at times like this, at times of great dysfunction in our nation politically and within our church, it's almost a time that we need to step back from the rabbit holes of all the issues involved there and reacquaint ourselves with this person, Jesus, who we say that we're following on this. And what better way to do that than go back to those people who wrote things for us, those who know about Jesus but need to have their faith bolstered, to go back to the Gospels and to read the Gospels to discover who this Jesus is. But that's daunting, isn't it? First of all, you open most Bibles and there's so much annotation and everything else there, you really can't read through it and get the story clearly. You could quickly get trapped and sidetracked, right? So what if Luke was alive today? What would Luke be doing to be able to communicate to Theophilus the story of Jesus in a way that would bolster his faith? their diversity of gifts now and then, is it just possible that maybe then writing something out, Luke would have made a movie? You chuckle. But there is such a thing. Before I was heading home at Christmas time, I began downloading films from Netflix to my iPad to watch on the plane, and I ran into a series of four films there, The Gospel of Mark, The Gospel of Matthew, etc. I was dubious. I thought, oh my God, is this something like The Passion of the Christ? But I set them aside thinking, at some point I'll watch these. They're long. Mark is about 2.5 hours, Matthew and Luke are 3.5 hours, and John is 3 hours. And finally, when I got to retreat this fall, right after Christmas, you know, in a retreat, the prime point of a retreat is to reacquaint yourself with Jesus, and usually that's done by reading. But I thought, I'm gonna do something different. I'm gonna watch the movies. I'm gonna listen to the gospel, and I'm gonna watch the gospel. And I was pleasantly surprised. I watched all four of them during the 7 days of the retreat, and it was really quite a stunning experience. I had the sense that the filmmakers were accomplishing what Luke said he wanted to accomplish. The films in question are a product of what's called the LUMO Project, L-U-M-O. And what's extraordinary about this project, and the first thing that you notice, is that the voiceover narration is literally reading through the New International Version or the King James Version, you can choose which one. And people are talking, of course, in the movie, but they're speaking in a faux Aramaic, not a real language, so nobody can watch the film and listen to the film and think they're actually hearing people talk. What they hear is the narrator reading every word of the Gospels. You are listening to the Gospels, and you are seeing the Gospels. And it's a whole new way of experiencing the Gospel from beginning to end. Not little snippets like we get here, which are great that we hear those every Sunday, but what is it like to watch the Gospel from beginning to end and to watch that four times? What's also extraordinary about these films, they were filmed in Morocco, and the actors and actresses are people who look like the people that would have lived in the ancient world of Jesus' time. It's important, I think, in a place as relentlessly white as Holy Trinity, to see the Gospels acted out as they were by people of color. And also, as you watch all of these, what they began to do is they only filmed one scene once. So if it's used in more than one gospel, you see exactly that scene over again. And suddenly you begin to see how the gospels relate to each other, how they use one another. And then you watch the Gospel of John and you realize this really is a strange gospel. It's nothing like the others, right? But you're seeing it and you're hearing it and you're not reading it. Sometimes the reading, we've done it so many times that it doesn't seem new and fresh. Here's the most important thing about it though. The most important thing for me in this experience was that I discovered that Jesus is a really strange person. We have images of what Jesus is like, but watching these movies, I have a new respect for the disciples. How could they figure this guy out? He was one day one thing, the other another, and it shakes up what you think of Jesus and the way you picture Jesus. And for me, that's actually a strengthening of faith rather than confirming who I think that Jesus is. And here's the trick. You can access this immediately. I am not being compensated by the LUMO Project for this homily at all. All right, how do you access it? First of all, you can go to YouTube and put in LUMO Project, and you get little snippets of it, so you can get a taste of it. You can go to Amazon and order the DVDs. They come in a packet now for all four of them for $20, such a deal. You can go to Netflix and stream it immediately. And I can't think of anything that's better in these times, in our nation, in our church, than on our next snow day, binge-watching the Gospels. That may get close to that experience that Theophilus had when he read this orderly presentation of what Jesus was about. Just as Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John color Jesus the way they thought it should be, certainly the filmmakers have done the same thing, but it's a way of bringing that story alive that I haven't experienced in years. And it ties back into that first reading. The first reading where Ezra is reading the law to the people, they get very upset about this, kind of like if you're trying to read the gospel and get caught up in the annotations. But what does he say? Go eat rich foods and drink sweet wines and allot portions to those who had nothing prepared, for today is holy to our Lord. Do not be saddened by this day, for rejoicing in the Lord must be your strength. Rejoicing in the Lord must be your strength, no matter what else is going on. And if you don't know the Lord, how can you rejoice in the Lord? Try the LUMO Project.